We have a memory time every week at our life group. And we started this with good intentions that the adults in the group would be memorizing, especially this adult, and reciting verses. Well, it turns out that it's only the kids in the class, with a few exceptions, that have any memory verses on a Wednesday night. This guy is an expert. One of the things that this expert recalls out of the law of Moses is something called the Shema. The Shema. Every Jewish boy, regardless of expert or not, knows this prayer, the Shema. Have you heard the Shema? The Shema is this prayer, meaning Shema, Hebrew for listen, take it in, do what it says, Shema. The expert recalls this prayer right in this moment. This prayer is so important that every male, as a matter of fact, I think every person repeats this every single day. In Deuteronomy, we read about this prayer, the Shema. Repeat this again and again to your children. Talk about this when you are at home and when you are on the road and when you are going to bed and when you are getting up. Tie this to your hands and wear it on your foreheads as a reminder. Write this on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. You ready for this prayer? The religious expert recalls it right now. Listen, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord alone. And you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. And you must commit yourselves wholeheartedly to these commands that I'm giving you today. Love the Lord your God with all your heart. You see, we look at these words as heart, mind, soul, and strength. We think heart, we think mind. The Hebrew was a little bit different. The Hebrew, love the Lord your God with all your heart. Love him with all of your body, with all of your mind, with all of your feelings. Give him all of your desires. Give him your future. Give him your failures. Love him with all of your soul. Devote to him every bit of your physical existence. Give him all of yourself. Give him all of your capabilities, all of your limitations. Love him with all your mind and strength. With every opportunity you have, love him. With every ability you have, love him. With every single capacity, love him. Honor the one who made you. The lawyer knows this is the answer. This is the answer to inheriting eternal life. But he remembers one more piece out of the law, Leviticus 19. He remembers that in this whole chapter, this whole part of the law that talks about how to treat each other, it concludes like this: do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against a fellow Israelite, but love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord Yahweh. Or one more place in Leviticus 19. Do not take advantage of foreigners who live among you in the land. Treat them like native-born Israelites and love them as you love yourself. Remember, you were once foreigners living in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. He understands this. He gets this. So he says, and love your neighbor as yourself. But I wonder, as those words come out of his mouth, does his heart get it? Does he understand what he's saying? Jesus listens to his answer and says, right. As my friend Jeff says, you got it. You got it. But does his heart get it? I had mentioned already that we're in a series called Core Values. And in this series, we're on the second to the last one. The core value for this week is we love God by wholeheartedly serving our neighbor. We love God by wholeheartedly serving our neighbor. We get this with our minds, but does our heart get it? The expert, he wants to justify his actions. He's the theologian. He knows the law. Love God with everything in you and love your neighbor as yourself. But he wants to define, and what exactly and who exactly is my neighbor. Because as he ponders it for just a split second, he realizes, you know, there are a few people I've neglected, I guess. I mean, there's a few people that definitely don't fall into the neighbor category. I mean, for one, there's the Romans around right now. They're mean. They can see you walking down the street. They can conscript you to walk 1 mile with them. They're mean. And when you walk that mile, they may ask you to carry their pack for them. Then there's the Samaritans, too. The Samaritans, they're a lost cause. They're a basket case. You know why? Because these Samaritans, they've like watered down Christianity, and they're not following God wholeheartedly. They've adopted all kinds of practices that this religious expert thinks are wrong. As a matter of fact, they had actually changed the law of God. I mean, then there was a few other groups of people too, I guess. There was the prostitutes, one. You stayed away from them. And sometimes it seemed like Jesus would go near them. But you stayed away from them, and they were people that made you unclean. There was the sinners too, the criminals. You stayed away from those too. I wonder, as you hear these categories of people that the religious expert probably did not consider his neighbor, I wonder if any of us can recall any groups of people that we may not consider our neighbor. Does anyone come to your mind that maybe you give a bit of a cold shoulder to, or you turn the other way, or you think they're not worthy of my time right now? So the lawyer, wanting to justify himself, says, who is my neighbor? Because surely Jesus must know, in life on this planet, there are friends and enemies. There are neighbors and strangers. Just beside our home in Thunder Bay, like all the rest of you, we have neighbors. We have neighbors on our left and neighbors on our right. Now, certainly, the gentleman on my left and his family is a great neighbor. This neighbor comes and clears the end of our driveway when it snows. This neighbor, when our driveway needs repair, comes and repairs the driveway. This neighbor, when they drive by, they're always waving. This neighbor, if I want to have a conversation, they are ready to talk. This neighbor owns a construction company in Thunder Bay. This neighbor is definitely a neighbor. Then there's the neighbor on the right-hand side. This neighbor, you know, I'm not quite so sure about. This neighbor never clears his driveway all winter long. Can you believe it? Not clear your driveway all winter long. Drive on the snow. The snow gets higher and higher. This neighbor, his hair is a little bit long. You know, this neighbor, is this guy my neighbor? We have neighbors here at the church. When I was coming into work this week, I come into work and I look in the side alley and in the backyard, and there's probably 20 black garbage bags full of garbage dumped in our yard. And I'm thinking, oh no, this is like the last thing I need to add to my plate today. You know, the maintenance guy, Mark, is having a great time in Florida, and here I am, it's minus 19, and I'm stuck with 20 garbage bags in the backyard. Then I look across the street, and I see the neighbor bringing the garbage in a shopping cart over into our churchyard. And I think, oh my goodness, here it is happening right in front of my eyes. Is he my neighbor? It reminds me of my wife's story. As many of you probably know, my wife went through a terrible divorce years ago. In that place, she is feeling isolated, she's feeling hurt, she's feeling afraid, but she is committed to her faith in Jesus, and so she gets the courage to go to church. And like we would all maybe say about each other, we are neighbors, are we not? And as she comes into the church building, she sits through the service with the courage to just be there, feeling isolated and alone, looking around, seeing all the families around her, all the people who look so happy. And she feels unhappy and afraid. So the service finishes and somebody comes up to her, a well-meaning neighbor, and says, "Hey, just wanted to share something with you. I just wanted to share something that I tell my kids. I tell my kids two things. Stay away from the family who has divorce. And stay away from the family who has any addiction in their family." Neighbors. Neighbors. Now, my wife has the humor about her to say, "Well, I have both. I am divorced, and my son struggles with addiction." Neighbors. Who is our neighbor? The lawyer wanting to justify himself asks just that very question. Jesus replies with a story. He says, "A Jewish man was traveling from Jerusalem down to Jericho. This man was alone on this journey. 17 miles between Jerusalem and Jericho, desert, dusty, windy road. On the side of this road, there are caves. And in those caves, there are robbers. The robbers wait for the right man at the right time to jump out, beat this man up, and take all of their belongings. Well, this is a bad day for this Jewish man traveling between Jerusalem and Jericho, because that's just what happens. As he's going along, the robbers come, beat him up. It says they strip him of his clothes, beating him up and leaving him half dead beside the road, naked. I don't know why this man was traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho. Your guess is as good as mine. I don't know. Did he have a wife and kids waiting for him in some other city? Had he just worshipped in Jerusalem and now was going to Jericho, or was he going to some other city? Or did he even believe in God at all? Did he pray in the morning when he got up? Where was he from? Was he African? Was he Indian? Was he indigenous to the land? But I'll tell you one thing about this man that we do know. We know that this man is now laying beside the road, bruised and beaten. We know that this man has a heart that goes thump, 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 thump. We know that this man has red blood. We know that this man is human. We know that he's lying there and no one is there. Death is on its way. Half dead means just that, half dead. We assume he's somewhat conscious. And as he lays there, I wonder if he looks up and down the road from Jerusalem to Jericho and wonders, is anyone going to come and help me? Well, let's say he does look. We know the story tells us that there is a man that does come by. This man is a priest. I imagine the victim laying there beside the road thinking, oh my goodness, look at that. There is someone who may help me. He begins to build up hope and anticipation of this man who is coming. And as the man comes closer, his anticipation only grows. The man is a priest. A priest. Someone who is close to the heart of God. A Christian. Someone who understands that you love your neighbor as yourself. The silhouette grows closer and closer. These priests, they were prophets. They interpreted the scriptures. They practiced prophecy. They even quoted the Shema daily. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your mind and with all your soul and with all your strength. It says, by chance, the priest came by. Not by chance. By divine goodness, the priest came by that day. And the priest nearly stops when he gets there. And he looks over and he sees this man beside the road. But before he had barely paused, he steps from the right-hand side of the road to the left-hand side of the road and goes around the man who lay in the ditch. We don't know why. The scriptures doesn't tell us why the priest, the man who is meant to be close to God's heart, steps around the man in the ditch. But he does. I don't know. Maybe it was because there was a rule in the Old Testament that said priests were not supposed to touch dead people. There was that rule. There were exceptions to that rule, but there was that rule. Maybe it was because if he did this, he would be ritually unclean and unable to go into the presence of God. There was that rule. We're not told why. We are told he steps around the man and continues on his way. Maybe he thought, if I stop here on the road right now, those robbers are maybe barely gone. And listen, the guy's dead anyway. What's the point of stopping? I'm putting myself in danger. But I'll tell you one thing. The priest doesn't realize, but that man's heart is going thump, thump, thump. And as a matter of fact, it's getting weaker by the moment. Well, not too long after, a temple assistant comes by. This temple assistant, he knows about as much as the priest. He is, you might say, almost as close to God as the priest. This guy gets it. He leads the nation in worship. But I wonder if he's been watching the priest. Maybe the road was straight. Maybe he could see from a long distance a man far ahead of him on the road from Jerusalem to Jericho. And as he sees the man ahead of him, far off in the distance, the priest stops for a split second and continues on his way. The Levite wonders, the temple assistant, what is going on? Well, when he gets to the scene, he realizes, oh, I know why the priest stopped here for a split second. But the temple assistant, he's a little more generous with his stop. It says he actually goes near the man laying in the ditch. I wonder if he goes near enough to actually realize that this guy is alive. Thump, thump, thump. I wonder if he goes that close. But as he pauses there for a minute, perhaps he thinks, well, you know, the priest, I kind of work for the priest. Like, the priests are the ones who actually get the big picture. You know, I guess maybe he's doing the right thing after all. Maybe I'll just follow his example. And so he steps from the right-hand side of the road to the left-hand side of the road, and he continues on his way. We don't know if the man laying in the ditch could see all this, could experience, but let's assume he did. At this point, all hope of deliverance is fading quickly. But then, just barely, he notices a third man coming down the road. And in my imagination, I imagine that it's about at this point in the story that our victim goes unconscious. And he awakes in a few minutes to find himself being carefully called. Hey, what's your name? Somebody stopped. Somebody noticed. Somebody cares. And carefully, this neighbor, this person, pulls out the oil and the wine and anoints the wounds. Perhaps pulls out clothing and rips up pieces of clothing and uses them as bandages on this man who is laying naked in the ditch. As he listens to the sound of the accent of the voice that's trying to understand his name, he realizes that the accent is different. What? Sounds Samaritan. Sounds different. Samaritan? How could a Samaritan? Why would a Samaritan? Why would a Samaritan ever be here and ever stop to care for someone like me, a Jew? Because there is no such a thing as a good Samaritan. There were no good Samaritans. There were no Samaritans that could be neighbors. The Samaritans, they were far from God. They were all confused in their faith. They said, and we see this story, and I think it's John chapter 4, They said, we worship God on Mount Gerizim, while the true Christians, the Jews, they worship God in Jerusalem. Well, this animosity builds and grows. And as a matter of fact, it's not that Jesus didn't even take sides. He actually said, the Samaritans, they're confused with their place of worship. One day, Jesus says, we will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. Jesus one day is traveling from Jerusalem, he's traveling to Jerusalem, and he comes to a Samaritan village, and they hear that he's a rabbi, that he's going to Jerusalem, and so they refuse him a place to stay. The disciples are mad, and they're like, you know, call down fire on this place. Burn these people up. There was nothing good that existed in relationship between Samaritans and Jews. There was hate, loss of hate. To make things worse, these Samaritans were secular. Because when the Greek king Antiochus Epiphanes came, they just bowed their knee to him. They assimilated. They actually said to Antiochus, we should rename our temple. We should rename it Temple of Jupiter Hellenius. Well, all I can tell you is that violence just began to exist between these two people groups, Jews and Samaritans. You know, the Samaritans come and they scatter bones in the Jerusalem temple. The Jews come and destroy the temple on Mount Gerizim. Just violence and hate existing between them. And so now, in this story, things have gotten so tense that a Jew would not even drink from a Samaritan's cup. And Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. Who is your neighbor? Well, there's one thing for sure. A Samaritan is not your neighbor. But here the Samaritan is single-handedly. He lifts the poor man onto his own donkey. He then takes him down the path just before nightfall, and he cares for the man all night as he checks him into an inn. I don't know. Maybe he just wants to be with him, make sure his heart keeps thump, thump, thump. He tends to his painful moans and groans. The next day, when the sun rises, he gets up and goes to the innkeeper, and he says, listen, I'm going to give you 2 silver coins. These 2 silver coins are for that guy that I rescued on the side of the road. Those 2 silver coins is a decent amount of money. 2 days' wages, enough for probably 2 weeks in a hotel. He says, listen, and if the bill runs over for taking care of this man, I will come back and I'll pay the rest of the tab. Keep the tab open for him. Now, which of these three would you say was a neighbor to the man who was attacked by bandits? The lawyer replied, the one who showed mercy, the one who showed compassion, the one who showed kindness. The lawyer, he doesn't seem to be able to hear, even in this moment, the thump, thump, thump of another man's life. He can't even bring himself to say the word Samaritan. He simply says, the one who has shown mercy. But Jesus doesn't seem to take issue with the lawyer at this point. Jesus has certainly won the debate, has he not? He just says simply to the lawyer, I assume looking at the lawyer with love and compassion, with also conviction, saying, you got it. Now go and do likewise. Who is your neighbor? We could perhaps be like that lawyer. We could perhaps study our Bible front to back every single day. We could memorize Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, and Revelation. And we could analyze every word and understand it all. And as my prof would say, we could study ourselves into disobedience. Jesus has only one line, go and do likewise. Because we love God by wholeheartedly serving those around us. And so it makes me wonder, how will I treat the neighbor on the right-hand side of our house? It makes me wonder, how will I treat the person who brought garbage across the street over to our church? It makes me wonder, how will the Alyssas of our congregation be treated? Those experiencing abuse or addiction or are alone or overwhelmed by life. Because the question is, who is your neighbor? Who is your neighbor? You invite the team up at this time. That's going to give us an opportunity to respond to this and ask ourselves that question, who is our neighbor?